Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. This week on the Majlis, we are talking about an unusual topic. Some recent reports from Western Kazakhstan is discussing fall of black snow. Reports coming from Bishkek suggest the city is or about to surpass Beijing as the most polluted city on the earth. And we have been recently hearing about mass fatalities of sea animals in the Caspian shores. And yes, we tragically remember the death of thousands of antelopes 2 years ago in Kazakhstan. This raises a serious question. What is really happening in Central Asia? Answer to all these questions lead us to one observation. Are we witnessing early signs of an environmental crisis in Central Asia? To discuss this, I'm joined by Sonia Zilberman, the South Caspian Energy and Environment Program Manager at the Crude Accountability. She is based in Washington, D.C., but her one eye is in the region following these alarming developments. Thank you very much, Sonia, for joining us.
Thank you very much, Mohammed. It's an honor to be here.
Very nice to have you. And Riskeldi Sadke is joining us from Bishkek, who's a journalist contributing to various media outlets. Riskeldi, very nice to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much. I appreciate that.
Aygerim Tolikanova is a journalist who until recently was based in Almaty, but today she's joining us from London.
Hello.
And Bruce Fanier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlo Owazi is also with us. Welcome on board, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Riskeldi, let's kick off the debate with you. It's kind of scary to read some reports suggesting Bishkek surpassing Beijing in the ranking of most polluted cities in the world. It has to be so bad, really bad, to surpass Beijing. How is it?
I think, you know, this is the problem that they had in Bishkek for about a few years now. Mm-hmm. And I was discussing this coal consumption in the city of Bishkek with the professor from Columbia University a couple of years ago. And he was telling me that the local governments there are obviously not realizing they should have a strategy in place to cut down on carbon emissions and also cut down on coal consumption. And because that's the only way to heat up the city here, you know, the central city from the Soviet days. And that's the only power that is generating heat here in the city in the winter season. But you know, they're blaming that establishment here. But at the same time, the city is full of automobiles. You know, the last figure, I believe, around more than 200,000. I cannot be sure on the number. And I think that's another part of the problem, too, because Kyrgyz government is not ready to implement environmental legislation and then forget about the local regulations. You know, we're talking about the car emissions and we're talking about certain standards. You know, they're applied in the West already, like in Europe or some other places, or let's say in Nepal. And that's the biggest problem for the country. And then they haven't ratified the Paris Agreement on top of everything else. They signed it, but they haven't ratified it yet. Elsewhere in the South, for instance, Osh City is also having this issue. I think it's the policy issue rather than something related to the local coal consumption.
Yeah, Riskeldi, on day-to-day basis, for example, who are the ones most affected by this change? How do you feel the effect, the resident of Bishkek?
Well, I think, you know, the air quality is not, it's not good. It's, you know, I since I live in Bishkek, I can say that it's worsened in the last couple of years. That's for sure. And the most vulnerable population here, we're talking about children. And if you're talking about the rest of the country, I don't think they have a problem with air quality, except the city of Osh, of course. That's the second largest city. But the rest of the Kyrgyzstan is not impacted by the coal emissions or car emissions.
Okay. I think Kazakhstan presents another interesting case study. Tell us about recent changes in the environment in your country. What are the cities or places most affected by this?
Well, according to Kazhgidromet data, there are many cities are in the list of highly increased air pollution. And what's interesting now, Astana is more polluted than Almaty. And we can see it with the recent use of Astana covered by smoke and recent use of Temirtau, where the black snow has appeared due to what company that caused this pollution and authorities said is lack of wind. So we can see that there are some cities in Kazakhstan show unusual patterns. And in general, it's obvious that we don't know much about the scale of air pollution, and authorities don't do enough to ensure the companies that are extracting natural resources from Kazakhstan follow environmental legislation.
Yeah, we will definitely talk about that topic a little bit later. Bruce, earlier we were talking about cases of black snow falling in Temirtau of Kazakhstan. That is an extreme example. Tell us more. What do we know?
Well, that was, I mean, I think it shocked everyone, and even in Kazakhstan, even in Temirtau. You know, I know that there's a lot of industry up there, and they've had this kind of problem in some of these towns, certainly in northeastern Kazakhstan for quite a while. But you know, there was all these pictures being posted on Kazakh news agencies showing this black snow, and someone found a satellite image of where Temirtau was, and it looked like a black hole, you know, in the middle of the steppe or something. So obviously, it never been that bad. I mean, you know, as bad as it is to be in any industrial town, this seemed to have been a lot worse than anyone had expected or ever experienced before. And it shows that they're having a serious problem. I mean, I know all the Central Asian countries want to ramp up industry and production, but you know, this is probably a warning that you're going to have to. This has to go hand in hand with some serious environmental legislation and efforts at clean energy, and especially in Kazakhstan's case, this is a shock. Because they just had the expo, you know, last year, and it was supposed to showcase green energy in Kazakhstan, and here we have black snow, you know, falling in the winter.
That brings me to you, Sonia, the black snow.
Okay.
So what does this tell you as an environmentalist?
You know, at Crude Accountability, Mohammed, we work specifically on the intersection of oil and gas extraction, environmental justice, and human rights. And I think to chime in with other speakers, the thing that we've noticed so much is that where corruption and bad governance is at the highest, environmental impacts are also the greatest. And this is not only has to do with the political will at hand, but also the inability of civil society to monitor environmental impacts, to really understand what is going on. We've seen a lot of cases where companies that are either financed by international financiers like the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, as was the case with the Kashagan project in the Caspian. They financed a company called Circle Maritime Invest that was a direct contractor of Ajip that developed the Kashagan field. And through their activities and the way that they just broke the sea ice in their transportation, they killed Caspian seals at the rate, something like every time a vessel went through, it killed 20 seals, to the point where I think about 1,000 Caspian seals were killed in 2010 just by the activities of this one company alone in the Caspian. And there was no environmental oversight. There's no environmental management. And it was only after the story broke in the independent media that enough pressure was able to be put on the government to actually introduce some environmental safeguards and measures to take that number down to 55 about seals a year that were killed, which is still significant considering this is an endangered species and an endemic species to the Caspian Sea.
Obviously, that's a tragic incident. Sonia, we will get to the cause of this problem. But before that, I was trying to set the scene, and we have not yet spoken about Turkmenistan. Obviously, Turkmenistan is facing this situation in its Caspian shores. Tell us a little bit, how does it look like there? I mean, when we talk about the environment.
Of course, as you very much know, Mohammed, Turkmenistan is largely a black hole.
Yeah.
It is very difficult to get environmental information out of the country, and it is very difficult to for local civil society or international experts to monitor what's happening, actually. Crude Accountability a few years ago was able to partner with the American Academy for the Advancement of Sciences, AAAS, to work with geospatial imagery to really understand what kind of impact the offshore gas sector is having on the sea floor and fauna. And what we discovered was a continuous oil slick. It's an oil slick that has been around since 2010. It is near the the rigs that are operated by Petronas and Dragon Oil. And the government has not addressed this, has not exposed this, and there's been no public acknowledgement or mitigation of this oil slick. So this is the type of information we are able to get simply with the technology that's available. But in terms of environmental monitoring, it's very difficult. Also, one thing to point to is that Turkmenistan dissolved its environmental ministry, Ministry of the Environment, in 2016, I believe. So actually, without a government ministry to manage environmental issues, how are we supposed to safeguard these living resources?
I think 2-3 years earlier, when I was in Prague, head of the Turkmen service, we got a report from Balkan province, which is neighboring Caspian Sea. That was a story of a village where mud would fall. So I don't know what happened to that village later. That was located next to a big refinery plant. Bruce, the country that we haven't yet spoken, Tajikistan, how Tajikistan is coping with this? Do they have this problem at all?
Well, in some ways, Tajikistan, it kind of has the same lack of media attention on this problem that Turkmenistan does. You know, the Turkmen authorities muzzle Tajik media pretty closely. There's a couple of independent media outlets still open, but they have to operate very carefully. So this doesn't even seem to be an issue on their radar, although certainly it must be, you know, because even we've had guests come from Tajikistan before, and they have told us that, you know, because they were dependent upon Uzbekistan for so many years for supplies of gas, and the Uzbek government under former president, now deceased president Islam Karimov, you know, used to shut the gas off on them all the time, especially during the winter. That it was, I think it was 2013. The Tajik authorities decided that they weren't going to depend on Uzbek gas anymore, and they were going to switch to coal. And they have huge coal reserves, like 4.5 billion tons or something like that. So they switched all their industries from gas power to coal power. And in the meantime, China has built a new thermal power plant in Dushanbe, which of course burns coal. And so it simply has to be, it must mirror the situation in Bishkek and Almaty, because it's a similar location backed up against the mountains. Because like I said, they've switched over as much as possible to burning coal throughout the country. And it's not talked about what kind of pollution it is, but it has to be there.
Now, Rizkel Diagrim, whoever wants to jump in, feel free. Referring to the incident that took place 2 years ago in Kazakhstan, I'm talking about the case of 200,000 antelopes died under suspicious circumstances in Kazakhstan. Do we have any further clarity on whether there was any environmental connection to that incident?
Well, I think there is a study, not the study, but I think, you know, scientists connected this problem with the antelopes in Kazakhstan with the climate change. Matter of fact, I think there was a report last week or this week which explained that the antelopes were vulnerable, and given the fact that they are species that need protection and they're in critical range at the moment in Kazakhstan. So scientists, they connected this problem to a bacterial infection. But the thing is that I think this Kazakhstan, the problem with antelopes there has to be addressed more broadly. And given the Kazakhstan's global stand, I think they could address this issue on the international level, given the fact that they're already at the UN Security Council. I think they could do more research on that. And probably this will affect not only the Kazakhstan, but Uzbekistan for sure, because they have their antelope population is not only constrained within Kazakhstan, it's also in Uzbekistan.
Agrim, anything to add?
Yeah, even last year, I think there were German scientists who also connected it to climate change and bacteria that affected Saiga antelopes. I think this is an issue that is not only environmentally affected, but maybe there is something more, and Kazakhstan needs to address it, as previously was said, on the global level, because there is still no clear consensus about the real reasons why half of the population of Saiga antelopes died.
Now, before we get into the second part, Sonia Bruce, very briefly, the impact of the environmental change has multidimensional layers to it. But listening to our guests from the region, it appears, at least in the cities, the pollution to be the immediate concern of the people. So what are the other examples and areas we should be looking at to examine the impact of this changing environment in the region? Bruce, Sonia, briefly, please.
Sonia, go ahead.
Okay, I mean, in terms of linking the environmental impacts to people, obviously fish stocks in the Caspian are a major issue. A lot of local populations have subsisted for generations either on fishing or the tourism industry. And as the Caspian countries continue to exploit their oil and gas reserves offshore in the Caspian, this has really devastating impact on the fish stocks. And in order for this to happen in a way that is most respectful of the environment and the people surrounding it, really we need strong political will to conduct proper environmental impact and monitor the activities and allow civil society to monitor the oil and gas development activities. So, for example, as a story in Turkmenistan, one of the projects that we at Prudent Accountability is working right now is the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development is supporting with a loan a company called CMI Offshore that is facilitating the transport, servicing an offshore oil rig off the shore of Turkmenistan. And we found out through our own devices that the transportation routes for these tugboats are going through a Ramsar protected area. This is the Khazar Nature Reserve in Turkmenistan. It is home to endemic and endangered species of fish, reptiles, birds, seasonal migration birds, mammals. I mean, it's a very environmentally sensitive area. And the EBRD even failed to do an environmental impact assessment because they labeled the project as transportation. And when we spoke to EBRD about this, their response was, well, we spoke to the management of the protected area and they told us everything is going to be okay. I mean, this is literally the response that we got. Yeah. You know, in the context of the liquidation of the Ministry of Environment last year in Turkmenistan, this is just atrocious how all of these impacts and developments can happen without proper environmental oversight. And obviously, this ties in with the political structures and the lack of independent freedom, civil society, lack of freedom of expression, assembly, and association in these countries. This really all has an impact on the management of living natural resources.
Bruce, very briefly on that.
Well, I mean, clearly they have to think about this thing. We know that these countries were all part of the Soviet Union, yeah. And the Soviet Union really didn't place much importance on environmental concerns. And the fact that in, you know, a little more than 25 years, they've been able to really hammer some of the areas in their area and make things so much worse in terms of pollution and environmental contamination, you know, it should really be a wake-up call to them. They're looking at health problems for the next generations to come. They're looking at problems with agriculture because this stuff is going to get in the soil. Yeah. I'm really kind of surprised that, you know, after taking the beating that the area did under the Soviet Union, they've managed to make it worse, you know, in a quarter of a century.
Yes, this is how it looks like on the ground. But what is causing to this what the authorities are doing about it, and are their measures proving effective? Let's continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like the Majlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. first, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are looking at and examining recent developments on alarming environmental changes in Central Asia. Joining me in the discussion are Sonia Silberman, the South Caspian Energy and Environment Program Manager at the Crude Accountability. Rizkeldi Sadka is joining us from Bishkek, who's an independent journalist. Aygrim Tolikanova, a journalist originally from Almaty, Kazakhstan, is joining us. And Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, blog Kishlok Owozi, is with us. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So the environmental picture is as bad as it can get. Also, the environment is the newest addition of many challenges that the Central Asians collectively facing in recent years. But it is a serious one, and the size and scope is increasingly getting dangerous. With this, Rizkeldi, maybe we can start with you. In your opinion, what is causing to this pollution? Talking about your country, your city, Bishkek, at least in Bishkek, it appears that the discussion is rounding up around one power plant. What is the story behind that?
Well, you know, I think, politically speaking, the government is not ready here in Kyrgyzstan. And the city of Bishkek is a perfect example because this is the biggest city in this country. Mm-hmm. And the level of pollution in this city, as I open up the data right now, it seems like the permissible concentration level is over twice and in some cases three times in the city. And depending on where you are, the pollution is very heavy in the business district. And sometimes you can't even see it. You know, when I travel down the city, I am amazed sometimes looking at the smoke. And I wonder how the hell, you know, they survive, you know, down there. Since, you know, I'm in the outskirts, close to the outskirts. And like I said, the city itself, they are not attempting to change the situation, at least not in the last month or two, as far as I know. They only started discussing this problem since the beginning of New Year, and actually they had some debates in December, but since then it is evolving into a discussion, a public political discussion. But it remains to be seen what happens, you know, from now on, because they have a new president who seems he's not into the environmental issues, as far as I know. The new prime minister also hasn't indicated his stand on environmental concerns, not only in Bishkek but elsewhere. And I guess we'll see how they act in Bishkek. But as I said, air pollution in Bishkek is not really good. And the residents, you know, if, as a guest previously said, the civil society here in Kyrgyzstan is more developed than anywhere else in Central Asia, they should do something, you know, logically. But, you know, the environmental groups haven't been active yet up to this point. We'll see how it goes.
Aygrim, in Kazakhstan, you know, some of the contributing elements that you mentioned also existed in the past, too. So what has changed recently that we are seeing this increased pollution? What people are talking about when it comes to these concerns?
I can tell about my city, Almaty. I think there are some positive changes in terms of how government now treats air pollution, because living as a citizen there, we can notice like lots of changes. They bought a lot of gas-driven buses, as well as generally changed the architecture of the city to make it more pedestrian-friendly. And if we can rely on Kazgidromet data, which is a state agency for monitoring air pollution and environment, Almaty, each year, air pollution levels in Almaty are decreasing, which we cannot say the same about other cities, unfortunately.
My question was, Aygrim, some of those things, the contributing factors, elements that you have mentioned, existed for years. And now, suddenly, we are witnessing air pollutions, mass death of antelopes, and then black snow falling to some of the Kazakhstan cities. I was wondering, is what has changed recently, which is causing to all these increased level of these problems?
Well, I cannot say in scientific language, but I think that maybe because there is bigger presence of industrial companies that extract maybe natural resources, they might affect somehow the overall level of pollution in the country, which is still like cannot be explained scientifically by scientists, but it might be one of the causes.
Sonia, the area in your watch list, again, kind of same question to you. So there were, you know, these gas, oil exploration companies or activities going on in that region in the past too. But now we are seeing their effect. Is it the exploration is the only factor that we are talking about when it comes to these setbacks in the environment or the ecology of that region, or something else is happening recently?
Well, Mohammed, I think we need to talk about and all of these kind of small piece of disasters in the context of a larger problem of global change, climate change. Of course, one can, climate change is such a big problem that happens, you know, I'm not a climate change scientist nor expert, but what I can say is that given the major water issues in Central Asia, compounded with rising water temperatures, as you know, the major rivers that are supplying all of Central Asia with water, they are starting at the glacial level and coming down through Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and flowing down into the other countries. And with rising temperatures and less snowpack that accumulates on these glaciers and glacial melt, we are experiencing desertification in the greater Central Asia region. This has a lot of impacts, transboundary impacts, especially with Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan increasing the number of dams in their portions of the waterways. So all of these issues are having, I think, a compound impact. Of course, oil and gas exploration is, you know, extractive industries cause the most emissions, and especially without proper regulations, we see much more emissions in terms of the production and distribution of these resources, as well as just the utilization. So I would really put all of this in the context of rising global warming temperatures, with the situation with the die-off of the antelope. I'm not an expert, and I don't know specifically about the causes of the bacteria that led to this mass die-off of the antelopes. But what we see in what we saw, I think, last year in Russian Siberia is that the melting permafrost had released some anthrax bacteria, which led to a similar, although not as great, die-off of reindeer. And this was a direct relation to climate change because it was the melting of the permafrost that captured all of these bacteria from, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago. So these are all unprecedented and really non-linear impacts of climate change that we're witnessing right now, in my opinion.
Thank you very much, Sonia. Earlier, you spoke a little bit about this risk, the nature of the environmental issues that we are discussed so far, when it comes to cause and effect, when compared to some other regions which are facing similar problem, is there anything that stands out in Central Asia?
Well, of course there is. In my observation, you know, after communicating with climate scientists and observers on glacier melt, on the climate change, I realized that, and actually I was in Nepal a couple of years ago, and I realized that in the Himalayan region, there is more cooperation on climate change-related aspects and policies. But in Central Asia, it's actually the opposite. You know, as you know, Mohammed and Bruce, you too, and my colleague in Kazakhstan, these countries are so disintegrated that they have so many differences. In order for them to cooperate on environmental concerns, you know, they have to get together first and then decide, you know, how to solve the problem. And, you know, we can talk about Aral Sea, we can talk about the glacier destruction in Tian Shan, as with respect to the Kumtor mine.
Yeah.
Or some other issues related to, as you said, to antelopes in Kazakhstan. All this combined, it relies on effective communication as a key to resolve these concerns. But the problem is that Central Asia is not there yet. Maybe that explains why countries like Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan or Kyrgyzstan, they can't resolve the issue of Aral Sea yet, because they can't communicate properly so they could address these problems. Well, luckily, Kazakhstan moved forward with scientific research of the climate change impact on glaciers in Central Asia. I wrote a piece recently about, actually I commented on creation of this research think tank in Almaty, which helps to bring together all the scientists together in the region and collect more data and scientific information about what's going on in the region, in Tian Shan, in Pamir Mountains. To do so, obviously there has to be a political will from all the sides. And after that, we can see more improvement in terms of collecting more information and research data. You know, if we do that, I guess scientists could see, you know, what prospects are, if there's any chance to adapt certain policies to impact of the climate change in the region, because it's a reality. And just to make my point, I just want to cite the study that was done by Chinese Academy of Science. Yeah. It's the latest on Tian Shan Mountains and about, you know, on glacier melt. And they concluded that the glacierized region of Tian Shan Mountains has undergone significant change in the past several decades, and that regional climate warming was too obvious. So yeah. Given that, you know, and the fact that the Tian Shan is home to 8,000 glaciers, and the water from the mountains, you know, feeds approximately up to 50 million people in three or four countries in the region. Yeah. I mean, you can understand the significance of the problem here.
Yeah, it was a really good point that you mentioned about the RLC risk. Maybe, Bruce, we can continue with this question. Like, RLC is really a big example of where the region is heading. And we have seen mass deaths of antelopes recently, and today we are witnessing the smog and pollution in major cities in Central Asia, Bishkek and Almaty. So authorities know that this is a problem. But on the opposite side, you see Turkmenistan is building a huge lake in the middle of a desert, which everyone thinks, with little scientific knowledge even, that this is leading to another disaster. They don't know that this is a serious problem, or they don't know what to do, how to act. What's the problem here?
There's a couple of things at work here. In the case of Turkmenistan, this is another one of those image vanity project kind of things that they're going to show that they're going to be able to make the desert bloom. So they want to put this in front of the people and say, look, we're making all this kind of progress. Now, we know that the Central Asian population is growing phenomenally in Central Asia. I mean, there was about 8 million people, 9 million people living there 100 years ago, another 70 million people living yeah. there. So it means you're going to have to open up agriculture. There's a lot of things that are going to change with this. That's what's led to the desiccation of the Aral Sea, is the fact that they've opened up agriculture, especially cotton. And so not as much water is making its way to the Aral Sea because it's being siphoned off along the way, and you know, both from the Sur Daria and Amudarya, you know, so this is a huge problem, and you know, and of course all the countries want economic growth, so you know, that they're going to open up as much industry as they can and build plants and stuff, and then they have, with more people, you need power plants so you can provide people with electricity and everything, and of course you know, factories and plants and stuff have to have that too. So I mean, there's more need for all these resources, and they're using them up as fast as they can. I would like to make one point, though, since, you know, Riskeldi was talking about cooperation between the countries, is that every time, or a lot of times, when Central Asian governments do raise environmental concerns, there's another motive for what they're doing. In Kazakhstan, they have told, you know, companies that you're polluting the land and, you know, you violated our environmental laws and stuff like that. But usually it's so they can get extra, so they can fine them and get a lot of money out of them, or take over shares in the company as compensation for this environmental damage. And the people who've actually suffered from it get nothing from this. The government just take the money. We saw this when their economic crisis started to hit, that this was one of the ways that not just the Kazakh government, but other government, Kyrgyzstan and Kumtor, for instance, would hit these companies up with fines, you know, ostensibly for environmental damage, but in the end, it was because they wanted money. Uzbekistan just dissolved a Green Party that was created under Islam Karimov. The Green Party was complaining about water pollution coming from Tajikistan, but that was from the aluminum plant in Tajikistan. That was the sole reason for the so-called Green Party, which was supposed to be protecting the environment, was just to complain about this aluminum factory in Tajikistan. So it had political implications to it. So they misuse environmental protection for economic and political reasons all the time, and it almost sets up a red flag when a government says, we have environmental concerns with a certain project or region, because immediately you start to think, what do you really want out of this? It's not protecting the environment. It's about money. It's about, getting the neighboring country to shut down its major source of, or a source of its income or something like that. It's too bad it's happened that way. But, it's the opposite of cooperation. It's using environmentalism for political reasons or economic reasons.
Yeah. We are unfortunately have to conclude the discussion very soon. But the final points here. So yes, Bruce, you were saying that there are some national factors behind what Central Asian do, why they do. I understand their individual needs. But since the issue is really pressing, the cost of not acting, not cooperating is greater every second day. The question is, maybe Riskelde, how much of time the region got to act about this?
Well, I think they have time because the climate change is the kind of development that is projected to hit the region in the next 50 to 60 years. It is already impacting certain countries like Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan. We know that the glacier melt is progressing as we speak. And this is something that, this whole region must understand, that, without cooperation, they are moving nowhere. And that's a dead end. So, and I think, this has to do with the major countries in the region. First of all, we're talking about Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan. So these are the two biggest states in the region, and they have enough power and the political will to set aside the differences and do something good. And in terms of Uzbekistan, I think the new president, Shavkat Mirziyoyev, and I think he's a person who has surprised many since last year, and hopefully we'll see something more in coming years from him. Mm-hmm. And I think he is the person who could really do something about the environmental concerns and resolving these issues, including Aral Sea. Mm-hmm. So I think, Kazakhstan, on the other hand, also has lots of tools, and since we're talking about Kazakhstan's initiatives on the global level, including international politics, I think, these two countries have a lot to bring, to the table. Yeah. And as to the rest of the states like Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan and Turkmenistan, maybe, as you know, these states have smaller economies. They don't have enough resources to offer at this point. But I think, they can surely cooperate with other states in the region. Yeah. And, since they are part of the region anyway, so they can be integrated better. And since it hasn't been in place, in the last 25 years. But now I think we can definitely talk that for the next decade, hopefully we'll see some progress.
Okay. With that optimistic note, Riskelde Satka, independent journalist in Kyrgyzstan, thank you very much for your insight. And Sonia Zilberman, the South Caspian Energy and Environment Program Manager at the Crude Accountability. And big thanks goes to Aygrim Tolikanova, a journalist from Kazakhstan, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your time in thoughts today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mohammed.
Thank you. This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.